Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out! It's only films to be buried with.
The Resurrection.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried with. The Resurrection. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a fisherman, and I love films. As Dr. Seuss famously once said, think left, think right, think low, think high. Oh, the things you can think if you only try. Imagine coming up with troubling boners, worrying widons. What kind of thinking would thinking come up with that? Very good point, Dr. Seuss. Big fan of your work. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. But not this week. This week, I use my newly acquired shamanic powers to bring back a former guest from the dead and ask them 12 new questions. This week, it is the return of the wonderful, amazing, and brilliant stand-up comedian, Nathaniel Metcalf. Big announcement. I'll be doing a huge live Films to be Buried With. That's Films to be Buried With live at the Hackney Empire on July 2nd. Tickets will be going on sale from 10 o'clock Friday morning. You can get them from plosive.co.uk or hackneyempire.co.uk. That's Films to be Buried With live at the Hackney Empire, July 2nd. Come along, we'll have a right old time. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes with Nat. We go deep. We talk about favourite film music. We talk about things you can do with your parents, all sorts. You also get the whole episode uncut and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Nat Metcalf, Nathaniel Metcalf, was on very early in Films to be Buried With. And it is because of him that everyone's favourite and least favourite question, troubling boners, worrying widons, exists. It was such a pleasure to get him back on the show. He's a lovely, lovely man and so funny. And I'm very excited to say that he's going back to stand-up. So you should all go and see him when you can. I think you're going to enjoy this one. Hope you're all very well. That's it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 193 of Films to be Buried With. The Resurrection! Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With, The Resurrection. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a man who has shaped this podcast more than any other. A comedian, an actor, a writer, a presenter, a man about town, a lover, a fighter, a peacekeeper, and a legend. Please welcome to the show. It's amazing. I've brought him back from the dead because I love him. Please welcome. Here he is. Can you believe it? It's Nathaniel Metcalf.
Hello. Wow. It's lovely to hear that I've shaped this podcast more than any other, including yourself.
I'd say, for those of you who have not listened to this podcast since episode one, and shame on you if that's you listening, Nathaniel Metcalf probably appeared episode 8, something like that,
before it started, coming out.
Oh, really? You were in the bank.
I was in the bank.
And because of the conversation I had with Nathaniel, out of that came the subcategory question, troubling boners, worrying widons, which did not exist before this man I see before me.
It's true. And I don't know if that's a great legacy. I had a lovely message once from someone who did your t-shirts, and they said, oh, because you invented troubling boners, do you want a t-shirt that has troubling boner on it? And I was like, thank you, but no thank you. I can't walk about with a t-shirt that says Troubling Boner on it.
But I think if you did, people would be like, hang on, is that you that invented the Troubling Boner?
Do you think that's what they think?
I think they'd be like, that's the guy.
I don't know if that would be their first thought. I think they would be, they'd go, oh, this guy's got... No, what they'd think was, they go, this guy thinks he's got like a funny, amusing t-shirt, right? There'll be some people, sure. There'll be some people that go, if they listen to the podcast, they go, hey, I know what that is. Most people will go, this guy got that t-shirt in Camden next to one that had Addie Hash on it. And he's just got a thing on it that says Troubling Boner. And this guy thinks he's funny and he's got a Troubling Boner. And or you'll be on a train and be someone, there'll be like a mother and daughter and they'll kind of look up and they'll kind of just, and she'll look at me with sad eyes. Yeah. And the daughter might ask what that means or something.
No, the daughter will point and go, Nathaniel Metcalf. And the mother will go, don't look at him.
I once did a thing. I was once in a train and there was a mother opposite me who was breastfeeding. But I'm a cool guy in the 2020s.
So cool. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this is cool. What I need to do, I want to make her feel comfortable. So all I'm going to do is just totally just go, I'm on a train. I'm going to stare out the window and watch things come in, going by, and just be like, don't worry about it. I'm cool. I'm chilled out. And I probably actually wasn't that chilled out about it. I was just going to go, I'm just going to stare out the window and concentrate on that. So I'm definitely not
sweating.
Yeah. So if I just thought, that'll be it. I'll just do it and try and make people feel uncomfortable. I mean, I'm sure she was totally comfortable. Otherwise, she wouldn't have done it. But I, of course, I immediately go, right, I've got to make an effort to be totally chilled out about this. So I stared out the window and I was really pleased with myself. And as we kind of approached London Bridge Station, I realized that we went through a tunnel, so it went a bit dark. And then I could see her in the reflection. And I went, oh, my God, does it look like I was just looking at a reflection? All this time, so I was intently staring at this reflection of a woman breastfeeding. And maybe none of those things.
Did you make eye contact with her through the window?
Yeah, well, that's just something we go.
Finished?
Oh, no.
So proud of you. Now, Nathaniel Metcalf, I ain't seen him in about a year, and that upsets me. But something I saw that made me really excited, looks like someone's coming back to do a stand-up show. True or false?
Oh, yeah, true. And yes, really is, please. Coming back. But like I'm trying to let myself off the hook and not let myself off the hook in that I'm writing it. And I'm, you know, if worse comes to worse, I can get a guest on to try and fill some time. But also, I mean, essentially, I've come back to stand-up having not done it either. I did, like, during the whole pandemic, I did some Zoom gigs and I didn't like them.
Mm-hmm.
And fair then enough. When they started coming back, I was like, I had some writing work and I was furloughed from my other job. So I was like, I'll be all right. And I felt bad because I knew there was people that hadn't been earning money. And I thought, well, other people that need the money should do the gigs right now if there's only a few gigs. And then I just drifted. And I'd sort of got to this point where I wasn't doing stand-up and I was going, have I stopped? And then I had this thing that I realized that I started getting insanely jealous of other comedians, like regular comedians do all the time.
That's when you realized you were still a comedian.
Yeah, but I didn't used to. But I didn't used to. I used to be really pleased for everyone's successes. People like you, I'm furious at you. But like, do you know what I mean? I'm genuinely always really happy for people. And then you start seeing, but in general, I think what I was annoyed at was there's people doing it. And I was going, oh, I'm sort of not doing it, am I? So I've kind of booked this to kind of make me do it, essentially, and to try and write something.
Have you had a gig yet?
No.
Save your first gig for the big show.
Well, that's what part of me's tempted to. But then also another part of me is having nightmares. So he goes, well, don't do that then. So I've got a kind of, but also I've got no ideas. I'm not someone who's got like really funny lockdown stuff or like, it's like, oh, what did I do? It's like, I've done nothing. And I've turned off all my stand-up receptors that make me notice things and go, oh, that's a thing. It's like, I don't notice things anymore. I'm just, I notice them in a, like a way that normal people do. I notice them in a kind of, that's a thing. Oh, someone just said something funny to someone that works in a chip shop. delete. Do you know what I mean? Like, what? What am I doing? I can't even remember what they said. That's funny. That's funny what that guy just said. Moved on. Next thought. I'm not doing, you know, I've got to turn my receptors back on. We've got to have all that going on.
Get them on. Well, I'm very excited. I'd like to see it. Why did you hate Zoom gigs, for goodness sakes?
Why did I hate them?
Yeah.
Well, do you know what? A couple of them were fine. The main thing was, some of them were really nice as well, and I'd be like enjoying it. And then I'd go, all right. And then you'd be like, you'd kind of get kicked out, and you're just, I'm just here where I am now.
Yeah.
Going, oh, I'll go to bed or something.
It's so weird, isn't it? That feeling when you finish a gig and you're just in your attic.
Ooh. Yeah. And you just want to say, can we all just stick around and have a chat or something?
You need to be like, what's it called? Like, sort of talk down afterwards. You can't just go.
Yeah.
If you imagine doing the 99 Club on a Saturday night and you come off stage and then instantly you were just in your attic.
But you know what? It feels like, and not to make light of it, but it almost feels like the sort of vibe of the room is almost like you're about to take your own life or something.
Oh,
there's nothing. 100%. There's nothing happening. There's just this void of like, all right. It feels like you're either going to take your own life or completely soullessly take someone else's. And myself included, people wouldn't even really be doing comedy because they were so awkward that they'd just sort of have a chat or something. Yeah. And it's like, what is this? What is this? And I had a bit that I'd kind of written, and you're saying it and you're not really getting feedback. And one I did, sometimes I get like, I wouldn't get sound, but occasionally I'd have like pictures of people and you're sort of just like willing them. You're sort of like, yeah, is this all right? Is this all right, faces? And it's just this sort of vague, like, they're like silent faces I was getting. And sometimes I had nothing. I had nothing. I had a picture of myself. And you just go, is this what I look like? Is this what I look like when I'm doing it?
The faces, the boxes, it was like a game of Guess Who. And you're just looking at Guess Who, like, who's laughing? Someone. Man with moustache, please smile.
There used to be a few gigs in London, I'm sure you did them, where the stand-up would be facing the room, but the back of the room would be a mirror. And so you'd occasionally catch yourself amongst the crowd, just looking back at yourself doing it and just going, oh, I don't need to see this. pulling these faces that you don't have any idea. And that's Zoom has become this thing. We're all getting used to our own faces. I don't see my face talking. But now you sort of kind of look at yourself, go, it's like hearing recordings of yourself. It's that again, but looking at my face going, oh, right. Okay, this makes sense. This makes
That's
sense.
So interesting. You're right. We as human beings in the history of humanity have seen our own faces more than we've ever seen our own faces.
Exactly.
In the last 2 years.
Exactly. And to be honest, mine makes a lot of sense of a lot of things that have been happening. Now I can look back and go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Oh, is that what I look like? Okay. All right. Okay. I can slot that back in and a lot of things start to come together now.
I never look like what I think I look like.
No.
When I see the mirror or if I've done acting and then I watch it back and go, oh, that wasn't at all what I thought I was doing with my face.
Weirdly, you're pulling a face when you're like combing your hair or brushing your teeth. Or you look in the mirror when you're about to leave the house and you go, yeah, I look all right. And it's because you're sort of doing a weird like pose. You go, yeah, all right. I'm a Norman Rockwell painting. Sure, I look good. But like you don't see yourself doing this. You don't see arms flailing and doing like weird things with your mouth and things. You go, oh, well, that's a weird old face. it's a weird old face you got there.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Listen, you've made two observations in the last 10 minutes.
The receptors are back on, Brett.
I'd say the receptors are firing on all cylinders, which is good news because Nathaniel Metcalf, you have been brought back to life because I like you. You get a second chance.
Wow.
But what point in your life would you like to come back to? Is there something you'd change? Any regrets, boy? What will you keep the same?
Do you know what? I've got tons of regrets. Of course I have.
Really?
Like all of it's like, but also I don't think I've figured out the answer yet. So it'd be wrong of me to come back because I'd just, you know, I'd go back and change something bad. I'd make things worse. I'd be like, that's a movie, isn't it? What am I thinking of?
The Butterfly Effect?
Yeah, I'd be the Butterfly Effect. I need to get everything right in the present first before I could go back and change everything. Surely. Dude. You need to kind of sort yourself out first and then go, all right, now. But then you probably wouldn't want to go back because you go, oh, actually, I'm all right now. That's how I'd feel about it.
How many regrets have you got? Give me a number.
Oh, loads. 3 or 4 big ones. And okay. But like, do you know, like Frank Sinatra, My Way, he says, regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. And I think, yeah. I've heard a lot about you, Frank. And if I were you, I'd have loads of regrets. I'd be singing that going, oh man, I've got some. And the fact he's only got a few, or thinks he only has a few, makes me go, no, I don't know if I'm into you. Yeah, I don't think I'm into you, Frank.
He's also, you know, everything's his way. That song is very revealing on a number of levels. He's like, fuck you. The song should just be called Fuck You and Everyone I've Harmed Along the Way.
Yeah. Sure, I've done some bad things, but not that many. I don't think about them that much.
not worth going into. So you've got a few regrets, but you're not going to come back because you've got no solutions to those.
Yeah,
If you could do them again, you'd do them worse.
My worry. I kind of wish something like stand-up. I kind of wish I'd started that sooner because I think it was a lot of like, a lot of things kind of make sense when I did it. And you go, that makes sense. Yeah. I can do that. And also I think it's sort of when you start older, you're only ever going to get to a certain level. I really like it when I see young people doing it, which is kind of what happens now, right? And it's like, people are only going to, that audience are going to age with them. Whereas I'm now just, you know, I started later and I'm quite an odd 42-year-old. You go like, right, yeah, people aren't relating to this guy. And why should they? It's different.
Why are you worried you're lonely? I don't know if I agree with your thesis.
I don't know. I think people do it like, the longer you do it, you should get better and better, right?
Yeah.
And people that start younger. I mean, you've sort of seen it with people that we started with who would like be 17 or 18 and you think, and when they start, you go, you're too young to be doing this.
Mm.
But then actually, they're not. They're just learning this thing at a really young age. And 10 years later, they're 10 years better and they're 27 or something. And you go, wow, imagine that. That's great.
Yeah.
Imagine being that good at 27. That's how old I was when I started. That's great. I think that's exciting.
Yeah, you're right. I think I'd go back. I'd start earlier if I could. I started late. But, you know, I met someone in America, right? I've been thinking about this so much. I met someone in LA and they told me a story about, I can't remember what it was. They had an idea for something. This wasn't a TV. It was like a product. Basically, they had an idea for a product. They got the product made. They sold the product. The product was successful. And I said to them, did you know anything about making the product? And they said, no, I knew nothing. I just looked it up and I found a person and I called them up and I said, do you make these things? And blah, blah, blah. Just did it. Had this idea, did the thing. The thing was successful. And I said, did you not have like loads of doubt and loads of time spent worrying about the thing? And they said, no. And I thought, you just skipped all the years of going, I don't think I could do that. I don't know anything about this, but of course I couldn't do this. And just did the bit. And the reality is with you and me and most people, we always end up doing the thing. There's just sort of a long period of doubt and questioning and, I probably couldn't do that.
Yeah, you're right. It wasn't like I was at 17. I was probably thinking about, I'd like to do that. I can't do that.
Yeah, I always wanted to do stand-up. Why did it take me so long? If I just skipped the bit where I went, I probably couldn't do that.
Yeah, so that's what you do.
What a waste.
Just do it. Just do it, kids.
Nike was right.
He was.
Prince Nike was right.
I love Nike.
Okay, so you've come back to now. You're changing nothing despite all these.
So you only bring certain people back to life, right?
Yeah, only the ones I like.
Wow, that's telling for all the other guests. I hope Judd Apatow doesn't listen back to this.
Well, he only just died. I got to give him some time to. You got to let. I don't bring people back from the dead quick.
Yeah, of course.
Like
But it's been longer than most as well.
Well, you died young, and I know. But it's been a long time coming.
I think you've got too much responsibility. You've got too much power with this.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing it for good, but do you know what I mean? There's an element to it which is quite sinister, that you have the power to bring certain people back, and it's your choice. That's interesting. Yeah. That's too much power.
Listen, it's my choice who gets into heaven as well.
Wow.
Listen, and the people that stay dead, they're in heaven. They're having a nice time. Don't get me wrong.
I suppose. Yeah, yeah. They've decided. Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Some people just, it's like with you, it was like, I think there's more. Some people have left to die because they were done, you know. They'd had a perfect run.
But I was in heaven getting annoyed at other comedians doing
exactly,
things.
Exactly, and I heard about I had to bring him back.
Okay.
So you come back to life. People want to hear about you, your death and your new life. But they want to talk about films again because you're hanging out with your kind of people.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first thing they ask is, what's the last film you saw, Nathaniel Metcalf?
I saw, over the weekend, Ali and Ava.
Talk to me about Ali and Ava.
It has got Adil Akhtar and Claire Rushbrook in it. And Adil Akhtar is one of those guys that you see him in this and you go, he's been in stuff for sure.
Yeah.
And you go, he's probably most famous for being in Four Lions. Mm-hmm. And when you saw him in Four Lions, that was, 10 years ago or something, you go, this guy's incredible. This guy's going to be in everything. And he's done well. And I don't want to knock him, but you see him in this again and go, this guy's amazing. Why isn't he in everything? And he's so great. Like, and it's a film it's quite a difficult watch with an actor in it who is so charming that I just cannot, but it's again, you're going, this guy should be huge. Why isn't this guy in everything? I wouldn't have time. If he was in everything, I wouldn't have time to watch everything, but he should be, you know, he's one of what a wonderful kind of, like, he's a proper charmer. You just like him immediately. He's like, he's got such, and in it, he's like, he's even playing like a landlord in this. And you go, I still like him. Still a nice guy. I like him a lot. I'm dismissing, it seems, Claire Rushbrook, who's also terrific. It's just that I was so struck by, I love Adil Akhtar. And then you go, it's crazy. It's crazy he's not in more stuff. I'm sure he's doing well and he's working and he's happy and everything.
He is always in stuff, but you're right, he should be bigger parts in all stuff.
And it's really nice to see him in something like this where he's the co-lead of something. I wouldn't say it's a comedy. Right. It's got funny bits in it. I wouldn't say it's a comedy. It's definitely romantic, and it is about romance. Not about romance. It's about love and different kinds of love. The bit of it which is the most profound is difficult to talk about, but happens at the end, which isn't even between the two main characters.
Without spoiling anything, is it overall a positive or a negative film?
I would say overall it is a positive film. I came out of the film so sad, and yet it's really hopeful. And I keep reading reviews about how joyous it is, and I went, I don't know what I'm like then. Because I saw there's a bit in it that made me so profoundly sad that I was like, oh, God. But it's a real sort of, I've not seen that in a film before, but it felt very truthful.
Oh, wow.
But I just found it, like, there's a moment that happens towards the end, which is very sad. That isn't even between, it's between Adil Akhtar and one of the other members of the cast. And it's all about kind of love and different types of love and things. It's really good. It's very profound. But, like, it's not like, you know, have you seen The Selfish Giant?
I have seen The Selfish Giant.
Whoa. Yes. Whoa, Nelly. That's tough. That is tough.
The Selfish Giant there's a moment in it that's up there with Kez with putting a bird in a fucking bin. I was like, are you joking?
Do you know what? I was talking to someone about it the other day after I'd seen Ali and Ava. And I was talking about Selfish Giant. And I said, the thing is, right, they made a choice where that film could still exist and still have a thing where it's about, like, the kid's riding horses. That's really nice for him. He's having a tough life. That film could still achieve a lot of what it achieves and be about a kid who goes, like, at the end of it, they go, do you know what? That kid's really good at riding horses now. He could maybe be a jockey or something and get out of this, his background, sort of achieve something. And I thought, there is an interesting thing that at some point writing that, she must have made a choice to go, nah, fuck him. Do you know what I mean? It could still achieve a lot of the same things, film.
I really
do. And not have that, not have like the...
It really upsets me.
That's upsetting.
really, really upset me, that film. And all the horse stuff, I was like, you know, in storytelling, you went, here's training for a horse race. So we're going to have a horse race. No, we're not. I'll tell you why we're not.
But of course,
something horrific is going to happen, and there will be no horse racing.
But also, of course, I love a grim British kitchen sink drama. So a bit of me went brilliant when that happened. But I went brilliant, but I was also going, well, that is upsetting and sad that that happened. But with that film, it was interesting because it felt like you're on a journey going, oh, I've seen this film. This is nice. Yeah. This is nice.
It's like, that film is like, if in the full Monty, they did a dance rehearsal, and as they left the rehearsal studio, they got shot. And there was no final dance because they'd all been shot and they were dead. That's what that film is like.
Now, it would be like in the full Monty if one of them shot the other ones and then the guy who shot them went, oh, what have I done? And a car walks past and says, oh, I've just heard the news. And he goes, what? That I shot them people? And he goes, no, that your son is dead. It'd be like that. It'd be so like the bleakest kind of, oh.
That's fair.
Oh, no. Credits. To hot chocolate playing over the top.
Nathaniel Metcalf, who do you think should play you in the film of your life?
Well, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because it feels almost like a conceited question. Because
you tell the truth.
You pick someone too good looking? But then also it's like I keep thinking the people that I would think that you'd go, I maybe look a bit like that person. They're also probably at least 10 years older than me, given the nature of film stars. So I would be like, will it be weird if they played me in a film? Because by the time the film comes out, they're going to be old playing me.
Okay.
So you're almost trying to think of maybe someone that hasn't been born yet. And then you're trying to think of the circumstances that someone would make a film of me. And I don't think I've done anything horrible that people haven't found out about yet. And it'd be a terrible...
Well, there is this long list of regrets we need to deal with.
So it's interesting. So if they're making a film, it's probably going to be me for something that hasn't happened yet. So if I go, so I was thinking initially, someone people have said that I look like in the past, and I don't want to seem conceited about it, would be someone like Brendan Fraser has been mentioned.
Really good shout.
So maybe someone like that. But I also quite like the idea of giving Michael Sheen a go, because he's had a go of everyone else, hasn't he? See what, because he's done everyone, and you go, maybe you could add him to the pantheon of people he's played.
I like Brendan Fraser.
Okay.
For you? I've not heard that, and I think that's a great shout.
Someone else who I think probably is too good looking, but someone who I occasionally see in things. And in my head, I think maybe the mirror me would be going, hey, I think that guy looks a bit like me. But then I think in hindsight, I've gone, no, that guy's much better looking than me. Was the guy, do you know Michael Pitt?
Yeah, from Funny Games.
From Funny Games. And I've occasionally seen him in things and gone, from Funny Games and The Dreamers. Exactly my two references that I would have said. But I've seen him in things go, hey, I think that guy looks a bit like me. But luckily, I've had the last 2 years on Zoom and I can go, no. Michael Pitt is a very good looking guy. I'll take that back. Not to say Brendan Fraser isn't. He's also a very good-looking man.
I think you look like George of the Jungle, and that's a huge compliment.
There we go.
What is the most romantic film you've ever seen? You're a romantic, aren't you, for God's sakes?
Yeah, and do you know what? This is hard, because this is the one I definitely think I'm going to remember something else. And I quite like films that have a sort of element of sort of tragedy in their romance. Mm. And I thought, I bet there's a really good example of that that I can't remember. But I also, one of my favourite films is A Matter of Life and Death, which is it's also like a romantic film all about a guy who, in a fantasy way though, so he's, you know, he finds love at the point where he should already have died, and is sort of resurrected by accident. He's meant to go to heaven but doesn't, and in the time period of which he's supposed to have died, he meets someone and falls in love. And then basically has to have a whole court case with God and various spirits and heavenly bodies to convince them that he deserves to stay alive because they've cheated him out of this romance.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite films, which is in itself, it's entirely a romantic comedy drama.
I don't want to spoil it. So spoil it. I'm going to spoil it. So skip ahead if you've not seen Matter of Life and Death. When I finally saw that film, I really, really loved it. And I was shocked that it had a happy ending. I really thought, this is a British film. there's no way he's going to live and get his... there's just no way. And I was really like, oh, okay.
But he does it because they don't give you it fully happy, because he achieves it because he needs someone to represent him and he can't find anyone. And then the doctor, who in real life has been helping them the whole way, gets killed in a motorbike accident and is able to come back. So it has an element of tragedy. They didn't let him off fully. Someone's got to die. Someone's got to pay the price.
That's true.
We can't have a pure happy ending. You've got to have some sadness. Doctor. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's awful. He's got to live with that guilt for the rest of his life.
And ideally, he's a doctor. He could have probably saved many more lives, but then has to come back to help David Niven out. So I thought of that one. Another one I think is kind of, that I saw recently, I didn't see it when it came out, was The Handmaiden.
Great film, yeah.
And I think that in itself is really the whole thing that you kind of, complete misdirection all the time, but ends with this thing where you kind of go, oh, well, that's actually a really beautiful kind of, and it's all about sort of using sex. Elements that was hate as essentially that other people have used against someone as a loving thing. It's very nice ending to something which is, you know, also a film which is at times very grim.
It's got the sexiest tooth shaving scene of all time in, though. What a sexy tooth shaving scene. You never think growing up, one day I'll see a film with a really sexy tooth shaving. Tooth shaving doesn't sound sexy.
I think that film is quite incredible, because it is both incredibly sexy, but also like there's so many things like, is this all right? Is this all right? And also it's also weirdly, it's odd to see something so explicit as well, which also you go through your head and go through a Rolodex of, is this all right? And at the end of it, you go, yeah, I think it's all right. I think it's fine. I think we're all all right, guys.
That's your matter of life and death that's going on in your head, the little court case. Yeah, I think we're okay. We just have to kill a doctor.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
What is the best film you ever saw that you never want to see again?
We've talked about grim films, and I've said I like a grim film, but I honestly don't think I could get through Grave of the Fireflies ever again.
No way.
That film is relentless. Absolutely relentless. It starts off, you go, you know, that's tragic. But lots of stories start with something tragic, and you get to overcome the tragedy. And you absolutely do not get to overcome anything. And every kind of turning point in the story, something worse happens than the thing that you thought was going to happen at the start. That's worse than the start. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. It introduces you to characters and you get to go, oh, I really love these characters. What sweet and charming characters. And it goes, oh, do you like them? Watch them die in a really, think of an unpleasant way to die. Oh, I've got one worse. Go on worse. And they just play out like this horrendous scenario. And then when you go, oh, I guess that's the end of the film. I guess this is just a really sad film. And that's a sad ending to a film. It's like, imagine what happens next to this character. I don't want to. But imagine what might happen to them. I don't know. Like, it's probably this, isn't it? And you go, yeah, it probably is what would naturally happen to that. Do you want to see it? Yeah. I guess we're going to see it, are we? Yeah, yeah. We're going to watch this happen as well. Watch this happen. Is that the end? Yeah, that's the end. See you later. Credits. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. How relentless that is at making you feel bad. It does not let up of how bad you'll feel during the film. And you just, like, to warn people, I'd recommend it. It's really good. I'd recommend it. And yet, like, you've got to go in prepared. That, like, I think it's a public service me telling people to watch it. And also saying, when you think the worst thing has happened in this film, it hasn't even happened yet. It's going to keep going.
You're still in the prologue, mate.
Yeah, nothing. This isn't it. This isn't why you go, like, you'd watch it now and go, I have heard this film's sad. And it's like, this isn't even started. This is the happy bit. This is the best you're going to feel for the next 80 minutes.
For the rest of your life. What is the best action film you've ever seen?
Well, I think I mentioned it last time. I've got a few answers for this, and one sounds kind of a bit highfalutin, which is probably going to be my answer. Last time I sort of mentioned Desperado, I think it's such an underrated action movie. I think it's incredible, and it's so visceral. And the time that I saw it for the first time, it was at London Film Festival, and it was packed, and everyone was so into it in a way that you wouldn't really imagine at somewhere like London Film Festival. To the point where halfway through, a guy in front of me kind of just turned around to be like, wow, this is great, right? Because it was so exciting. And you think, you know, when people talk about audience awards, I think no film went down as well at that festival as Desperado did. But it wouldn't get it because they don't want to say, that's a film that did it. And it's that's a film which is pure action. And all it's trying to do is show you exciting things and people shooting guns in comical and amusing ways. People are going to fly through a window. Someone's going to jump off a building firing a gun. What different ways can we fire a gun? Loads. Let's do them all. Let's think of just ways we can fire guns at people. And weirdly, it's not even doesn't even seem that violent. It's quite charming and it's funny. And it's really funny. Like, by the time you get to the, you know, the credit sequence, you've already had a brilliant scene with Steve Buscemi. It's all scenes and all of it is set pieces. And if it's not a set piece, it's like a funny scene between two people having a chat. It's great. Terrific action movie.
Really good answer. And it hasn't been brought up since you were last here.
No.
Really
good answer. I think it's such an underrated film. I think it's so great. The highfalutin one I was going to go with was going to be, and I think I could say this is an action movie, but it sounds highfalutin, is The Wages of Fear. You ever seen that?
That is a really, really good highfalutin answer. I would count that.
Because it is an action movie, even though I think people go, no, it's suspense. And you go, well, then Speed isn't an action movie. Do you know what I mean? It's surely, if anything is, that is. I saw that again. I hadn't seen it till recently. I saw it at the Prince Charles with Nick Helm and Pat Bircher. And Pat Bircher was when he was like coming in from New York, and he was jet lagged. And I think they'd both been out late, and we'd gone to see it on a Sunday afternoon. And they were basically said, there's no way we're going to stay awake during this film. And you go, sure. It's a film from like 1953. It's in black and white. Yeah. I've heard it's good. I kind of know what it's about, but like, I might have difficulty staying awake through this. And it's so exciting that all of us were on the edge of our seat. No one went to sleep because it is so, it's such an exciting film.
No one went to sleep is a quote I want on all film posters that I want to see. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it was either The Woman in Black or the sequel to The Woman in Black, the poster for that on the underground, the quote it used was, I didn't sleep for weeks. And I went, terrible recommendation. I don't want to see a film where I've gone, you're right. It's like, no, I haven't slept for weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. The amount of films that get advertised with a quote that says heartbreaking, and you think, oh, no thanks. Of all the films, if you had to, which film do you think you could have made and why?
I could have made. That's interesting. I don't know if I was thinking about it in the right way.
How were you thinking about it?
I was thinking of it like if you see a film and you go, if I made a film, that might be kind of like the film I'd make.
Yeah, yeah, that's that'll do.
Okay, well, something, certainly when it came out, I felt that about The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. And not because necessarily in a sort of Wes Anderson-y way, just there's something about the tone of that film that's slightly different. I mean, not to knock Wes Anderson, I like those first movies a lot more than sort of later ones.
Yeah.
And I don't mean necessarily aesthetically, but a little bit aesthetically, that what's different about that, I really like the colour palette on that film. I like that it all has a sort of feel of something like Tintin or something, whereas it's also funny and sad and has this sort of soundtrack that feels like, yeah, that's what I would want to hear. And it's just like when moments happen, you go, it feels almost like things switch sort of metronomy in this way that I really want them to happen. Like it's like you're watching it and going, I really want this to happen, but it probably won't happen because that's not how narrative works. And yeah. It happens. It's like that when you watch it going, I would want this to happen now. If like, and in that way, you're sort of probably always writing films. Like when you watch The Selfish Giant and go, well, I hope this boy doesn't, nothing tragic happens to this little boy who loves horses, but instead something else happens. But this has got a really sort of satisfying narrative that I was like, beat for beat, I was like going, this is what I want to happen. I want this to happen. And this should happen now. And I loved that. And that was probably one of the first times I was watching a film where it was, felt really like, this feels like the kind of film I would want to make. Not that I could necessarily, but just moment to moment, it has so many bits that just feel like, I love this. I love it that it does all that, how sort of imaginative it is. And when you get in the submarine, how you get to see the kind of, like almost like a blueprint of the submarine and the kind of walls cut out, and it shows you all the different rooms and where you are. And there's just so much kind of imagination in that. And for me, that's still my favorite film of his. I'm not knocking The Royal Tenenbaums. I'm not mad, but I love The Life Aquatic because there's something about it that feels really like this is a bit of me in this film.
That is a perfect answer. Well done.
Thank you.
Really good. Thank you. What is a film you have pretended to like to impress people?
Well, I reckon this might be the most controversial one, and I hope I've seeded this enough by trying to present myself as a good guy, great guy.
Because, so far, you seem like a great guy who likes films.
Yeah, because the film that I pretended to like is the film from a couple of years ago, a year or two ago, Little Women.
Whoa, the Greta Gerwig one.
I know. I get it, guys. I think it's fine. I really like Greta Gerwig. I think she's great. Big fan.
She's good. Yeah.
I'd never seen any other iteration of Little Women. I'd heard that this one, people loved it. People loving this film. Love
it's
it.
Great.
They love this film.
I love it.
Sure. Lots of people love it. I kept reading. Hey, we're up for this. And again, I saw this with Nick Helm. I think I saw it on like New Year's Day or something like that, around the Christmas season. Great film to see. Let's do it. Christmassy. It's going to be Christmassy.
Perfect New Year's
Perfect Day. Perfect New Year's Day film, right?
Yeah.
Afternoon, lovely. This will be really nice. I was a bit like, wow, is this what Little Women is, huh? I was like, all right, this is Little Women. Is this what it is? This is the film, right? This is the one. Is this the one we're talking about? Is this Little Women?
What everyone's really into.
Yeah, everyone's into it. There's lots of people who I didn't quite grasp for half the film. The penny dropped about halfway through. You go, where are all these adults pretending to be children? They're all running about, really excited that the mum's made a chicken for dinner or something. And they're running around. Laura Dern's made something nice for dinner. They made some biscuits or something. And they're all running around pretending to be children. And you go, how old are these people meant to be? Because they look like they're all in like their mid-20s, aren't they? They're really excited that there's Laura Dern's made a cloth
casserole.
a casserole or a little cloth dolly or something. Mum has made a cloth dolly. I don't know if that happens, but it's the kind of thing that might have happened. And you're watching it like that and you go, why is this happening? And the worst thing about it, and I kept thinking, and totally, what I also get is, I understand that this, of course, make this. People love this film. Not everything has to be made for me. Of course not. Of course not. Of course not. People love it. And yeah. I enjoy it. I'm like that they loved it. I like Greta Gerwig. I respect that she did it. Well done for making a film. You wanted to make it, obviously. Seems good. I think one of the worst elements of it was when there's a bit where their dad is played by Bob Odenkirk.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit where it cuts away to him in the Civil War. And it cuts away for a second. You get to see a bit of him at war. And a bit of my brain went, oh, now we're talking. Let's watch this. Now we're getting somewhere. And then I thought, right, the minute it kind of moved away from the Little Women,
yeah.
I realized I became more, and I've never felt more manly in my life at that point. Because a bit of me went, like, I'm not even that guy. I'm not that guy. But when I just saw a little bit of Civil War, I went, oh, here we go. Here we go. Now we're off. But it is, and I feel bad. Like, and do you know what? I felt bad while I was experiencing this in real time, going, I didn't realize how much of a manly man I was. That actually watching Little Women who love, you know, they all write, love doing dollies and doing like little puppet shows or something. They love it. They're having a great time.
You're one of the manliest men on the circuit, and that's, everyone knows that.
Good. I love it. Love that they made it. Well done, everyone involved.
For the record, I really love Little Women. I love it.
I believe you.
What is the film you've never seen that you think it's mad you've never seen it?
Any of the Harry Potter films.
That is mad. What is the film you love that you don't expect anyone else to like?
All right. Oh, man. I wish this one hadn't come up so quickly after the Little Women answer. Because I think people are going to... I think by the end of this...
Go on.
I think this might be where I get cancelled. I don't think that show's happening now.
About fucking time.
The film, I think's great. Mm. I love it. No one else likes it. I've kind of recommended it to people. No one believes me. I am a big fan of the film. I'm the only person in the world who likes it, Brett. Mordecai. Absolutely love it. I think it's one of the best comedies of the past decade. And I saw it after people hated it and went, I think that looked quite funny. I thought that looked quite funny. I saw a trailer for it. I watched it and went, that is funny. And then I'm sort of, then ever since, I just have heard people talk about how much they hate it and how awful it is. Mm. And I've watched it again because I didn't believe myself. I went, I'm going to watch this film again because it's not good. And I'm going to, the scales are going to fall from my eyes. Watched it a second time and went, it's a great movie.
I like it.
It's a great comedy. Love it. I think it's a really great comedy. Lots of reasons not to like it, even more in recent times. But I love the film. I think it's so funny.
That's great. I have to hold my hands up and say I have not seen it, and all I heard was horrendous things about it. I love a defender.
Yeah, I really like it. I think it's so funny. I think it's got a really good cast. I think they know what they're doing all the way through. I think tonally it's mad, but in a way that's like, I can see it. See, if you don't know that's what you're getting going in, it's off-putting. But you know that's the tone within the first like minute or two of the film. You go, all right, it's a film like this. Got it.
Right.
Go for it.
Are you going to make me watch Mordecai? Is that what's happening here?
Well, I don't know. I almost feel like I might be. I don't know anyone else that likes it. Even remotely would say anything positive about it, even.
Even Johnny Depp.
Is he gone off it?
I don't know.
But maybe. I'm sure he has some regrets. He's had a few.
No. I brought him back to life. He said, too few to mention. What is the film?
But one of them is Mork.
What is the film you would show a lover as a test to see if you should be together?
Well, I know I brought it up last time, but I think ultimately the one I would have to double dip on would always be It's a Wonderful Life. It's not only my favourite film, but I think it's got a film which is morally on point. And I feel like it would be the one thing that, you know, people can like what they like. As I said, I support people that like Little Women. Support.
No, you've been very generous with that, actually.
But I think It's Wonderful Life is one which is so, it's more that if someone didn't like it, I'd be like, oh, right. Oh, okay. Yeah, and I'd think about it for a while, but ultimately it's already done at that point. I think, yeah. I don't think there's any coming back from it.
Completely, you're right. I mean, I've got such a long list of films that would fit that criteria, but yeah, if someone doesn't get it, you're like, well, there's nothing for us here.
And would you bring it up occasionally? Or would
just cancel the wedding. I'd say, this is my fault for proposing before I showed you this film.
Right.
But we now need to cancel the wedding.
That's
fair. And in the email that we're going to send to everyone that we invited, I'm just going to say, she didn't like It's a Wonderful Life. And no one will. No one will even ask us to return the plates they bought us that we didn't really need. What's the film that made you the most uncomfortable? And you love an uncomfortable film. So what's the ultimate?
Well, this is a different kind of discomfort for me, because you might know something I've realized over the years. One of my personal failings is I don't think I'm a big fan of fun. I don't think I like fun that much. Sure, I like Mordecai. Who doesn't? But
everyone.
but I'm not a big, like, I think sometimes certain levels of fun I'm sort of uncomfortable with. I'm bad. Mm. And it's a real personal failing. I'm really bad. I can't really do dancing. I can't do it. I'm too self-conscious. I find that stuff a struggle. And I think it's a struggle for people that know me sometimes. And I certainly don't want someone to go to make me try and dance or something. Not a fun guy. I don't like films that are overly fun. And like, I'm not going to see something. I've no interest in seeing The Room. Doesn't interest me. It feels like, well, it's either someone who's sincerely tried to make a film that didn't work out. And I don't like the idea of those kind of, let's have a jolly kind of laugh at The Room and things. That just holds no interest for me. And if I did go and see The Room, I feel like I'd be going, shush, I just want to see The Room and see what it's up to, right? Because I might like it. I like more.
Why are you trying to speak?
I might be the guy who's into this. I might go, I like it. I liked it. It was good. But, you know, I don't like that jolly enforced fun of going to see something. I know some people do, and that's fine, and people like that. But I was intrigued by...
And if they want it, shout at the screen while Little Women's on their special Little Women night, they can.
Yeah, if I went to see Little Women and I was shouting, Mama, I'm making a cloth dolly at the screen really loud, people wouldn't be into it. But it's the same. It'd be the same equivalent thing. with that. But I was quite intrigued by The Disasterized. Maybe I shouldn't be. But I was kind of, let's give this a go. But I sort of made the mistake, I think, of seeing that at the Prince Charles Cinema. Mm. And I sat there so uncomfortable as people were shouting out things. And I was going, this isn't even The Room, right?
Right.
This is just a film. So you can't be shouting stuff out now. This is like sort of a proper film. And it sort of made me feel so uncomfortable at that, being in that sort of presence and sort of seething. I was like angry watching it. Like, just to me, it just felt like it's just gut. Like, you can't go, oh, shush, be quiet. Because it's like, no, this is our fun. This is what we do. We shout at the thing. And I shouldn't have seen it there. I probably should have seen it somewhere where there was two people in. Mm. And I sat at the back, which is the best way to watch a film.
Agreed.
But I saw it at the Prince Charles, probably my fault, but that I sat there sort of seething. And also what made me more uncomfortable was essentially that I could tell everyone else was having such a great time. And I felt like, and it also just makes you question everything in your head, like going, why am I like this? Why do I hate all these people who are having such a lovely time and they're going to leave. They're pumped. And I'm sort of screwing my hands up, balling my hands up and going, I can't bear this. I just can't bear it.
This is some really relatable content. I appreciate you. That all makes sense. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people listening that makes sense to.
Okay, good, good.
There'll be two people listening going, that makes sense to me. If you could show a child one film, What would it be, and what are you doing with that child?
Well, I feel like this is a... I feel heavy the responsibility of this. I've got, you know, I'm a godparent or whatever to kids, and I feel like this is something that I would like to do, and I'd like to introduce them to things. And I think I've got a certain taste in things, and I know what I liked when I was little. And a part of me is always going, I'd love to show them Kez. But I know, because but when I think that, you are one of the people that pops into my head and go, I shouldn't do that. That's not fair. It's a different time. But like, I do like it, and I do love it. And I think it's a great film for kids to watch. I think it, but I don't know that that is right. And I it goes through my head. This is a narrative that's constantly going through my head about things I'd like to show them. Another one for a similar thing would be something like Time Bandits, which I loved when I was a kid. But part of the thing I like about it is how it's kind of got these, it's also quite disturbing. And I really like that as a kid. And it's like one of the first films you come out where you go, I feel weird about that. I don't feel like super excited. I loved it. But then ultimately there's like strange things where, you know, the boy's parents get burnt to a crisp and get things, and you go, I don't know if that's the right thing. But I like that I came out of it with a weird sort of, I feel a bit different about this than I do other films, and I'm left to wonder something rather than just coming out and going, I loved it. I thought it was great. Yeah. You kind of go, I loved it, but I also feel a bit weird or a bit sad or a bit something else. And I think that film's a bit magic like that. It's got tons of, you know, it's got all the stuff that kids like, and it's proper action adventure, and it's huge, and it's heaven and hell, and it's giants, and it's got all these sort of huge fantasy elements, and it's also a little kid who just lives in, you know, a small kind of suburban house, but he's on this sort of huge kind of adventure. But ultimately, it's got so much stuff at the end of it that leaves you a bit kind of quizzical, and I think that's a really important thing that kids also get something else out of it. I think Pixar do that really well as well now for your modern era kids to just see something and go, oh yeah, but have a think about that, kids. You have a think about this as well, because that's something else. And I bet there are loads of kids that leave those films in the same way, a bit kind of, I feel like I've, you know, I feel like I've got a bit older in the last 90 minutes or something. And I think those films like that are very important. But a film which I think is a children's film, which I absolutely love, which I feel like I really would like to show someone, and I hope it hasn't dated in the way that I'd be frightened it has, would be something like The Railway Children, which I think is much, much better film than anyone gives it credit for. And it's an absolutely proper film up against all other films, I take it. And I think it is both, you know, the sort of Sunday afternoon classic-y thing that you would imagine. It's a very big kind of bank holiday type movie, but if you watch it, it's a proper movie, and I think people dismiss it in a way, and yet that film has got such kind of power of, and it's what it's dealing with is sentiment, and sentiment is hard. It's hard to do. It's hard to do. People think that stuff's easy. It deals with it in such a way that if it gets you properly, like, you know what's false sentiment and what's real sentiment, and that film is full of real sentiment, which is what's magic about it. And people, like, I really like a sort of sentimental film that works. And the difference is it's just some of it aren't doing it properly. It's false. Whereas some things are like, this is proper real sentiment. In that same way, you know, E.T. is real sentiment. But The Railway Children is that. I think it's an absolutely magic film. And it's a much, much better film than people give it credit for. It's a 5-star movie, The Railway Children. Absolutely wonderful.
That's a 5-star answer. Oh, Nathaniel Metcalf, you've been wonderful as before. In fact, you've been so good that I'm going to let you live.
I was touch and go at some of that point as well. I was worried about some of it was controversial.
Yeah, around Little Women, there was a little jury going on in my head, a little life and death going on up there.
It's a preview of some of the edgy stuff that I'll be coming out with soon. But you know, I do. I know. I really feel bad about it as well. I feel bad about Little Women.
You're right to. I'm glad. I know your new stand-up show is called Nathaniel Metcalf Edgelord. And
little preview there. Little preview.
But before I let you return to Earth for good, just in case something were to happen and at some point you were to die again. And I'm not saying you will, but I'm saying you might. What DVD would you leave in your will? You're only allowed to leave one. It's a very small bit of paper, I'm afraid. What are you going
to
leave?
Okay. What I'd leave then in my will to gift people is films that I think they won't otherwise watch. Okay. That I'd be like I should almost try and buy gifts of films. It's like, you won't watch this in normal circumstances, but hopefully if I give it to you, it'll be a step closer to you watching it. And a really, a film I absolutely love and is in, I think, probably top 10 films of all time for me, is a film that I think people think I like because I'm a big fan of Anthony Newley, but I also like it because it's one of the best films ever made. And that film is The Small World of Sammy Lee. And one time I had a pirate copy of this film and I'd give it to people for Christmas. I just had copies of it going, I'll just make copies of this and give it to people because I think it's such a good film that everyone ought to see it. But it feels like they probably won't otherwise see it because they go, oh, yeah, I get what that is. And it's like, you don't get what it is. You don't get what it is. It's, you know, it's such a
what is
great,
it?
Great film. It's a film about a guy who is, he has in real time a day. He works as a compere in a strip club in 60s Soho. And he has to raise a huge amount of money to pay off gambling debts before the end of the day, whilst also keeping this burlesque show going. So he can only leave the club for 10 minutes at a time when the girls are on stage. And he has to sort of pay Peter to pay Paul and sort of rob and steal and do deals in these 10 minutes when the girls are on stage, whilst also getting back to the club. And you're watching this thing and it's so stressful to watch.
Yeah.
It's what's the I've forgotten the name of it. The
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems. When I saw the trailer for that, I went, it's Small World of Sammy Lee. It's Small World of Sammy Lee. And I know that I saw a thing that Edgar Wright was a big, he'd watched Small World of Sammy Lee, I think, recently. He was talking about it on Twitter. And then loads of people, I think, had done what I'd done. And had obviously, but what I didn't do, because I'm not awful, I wasn't tagging in the Savdie brothers into tweets saying, mate, this is Small to Sammy Lee. But I think he'd sort of had that power and mentioned it going,
right,
you guys have seen this, right? And genuinely, I think they were like, no, what is it? And I was like, it's sort of weirder that they haven't seen it. But I totally believe they haven't. But when you watch it, it's such a kind of, it's like a remake of Small to Sammy Lee, really.
Wow.
It's a great, 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 great film.
I want to watch that more than Mordecai.
That's crazy.
What?
Oh yeah, I'd say watch that before Mordecai. I don't know if you should. I don't know if anyone should watch Mordecai. I just think it is one of those things where you go, I guess I'm a unique snowflake in the world. I am. I guess that's who it's for. I guess I'm the one who it's for.
Nathaniel Metcalf, what a treat you are. Is there anything you would like to tell people to listen to, or watch, or read, or look out for, or do?
I would, you know, not really. You know, live your lives. Have a lovely day.
Come see your stand-up.
Yeah. That's on at the Mahuntleth Comedy Festival in Wales on the 1st of May on that weekend. There's loads of other things to see. And also, like, as a recommendation, I can't even recommend it yet because it's not really written yet. But, like, I'm hoping. But, like, you know, it might be all right. But I cannot guarantee it.
I think it's a pretty safe bet. It's a safe bet.
Thank you.
Nathaniel Metcalf, I have nothing but love for you. Thank you and welcome back.
I love you too, Brett. I'm delighted to see you after all this time virtually. And it's absolutely delight.
Good evening.
So that was episode 193. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra chat, video, etc. with Nat. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. Lovely thing to read, helps with numbers. My neighbour Maureen loves it. Thank you so much to Nat for doing the show. Go see his stand-up. Thanks to Scroobius Pippin, the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. You know what I mean. Come and join me next week. Oh, I've got a really good guest next week, like always. Won't tell you who. You're going to love it. Thank you all for listening. I hope everyone is well. Anything else we need to know? Not really. I think that's it. So that is it for now. I hope you all have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late-night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.